Hi, everybody. My name is Riku, recovered, not cured, compulsive overeater. I just want to start with a prayer just to get me centered. Otherwise, my ego will just burst through the door. So, God, take me where you want me to go. Let me meet who you want me to meet. Tell me what you want me to say. And for goodness sake, keep me out of your way, please. Okay, so just a brief qualification. I'm sorry, guys, if you've heard my story before, but I'm going to read a paragraph out of the big book from the doctor's opinion. I sponsor through the big book. It's all about the big book for me because that's when I really understood the allergy of the body, the phenomenon of craving and the mental twist. So this is the really important part for me. And this is basically my story in a paragraph on XXVIII. Men and women drink, essentially. So Rita Q ate her alcoholic foods, essentially because she liked the effect produced by them. The sensation was so elusive that though Rita Q knew it was injurious, she couldn't after a time differentiate the truth from the false. To her, her compulsive overeating life seemed the only normal one. She was restless, irritable and discontented unless she could again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few alcoholic bites. Alcoholic bites she sees others taken with impunity. After she has succumbed to the desire again, as she often does, the phenomenon of craving develops and she passes through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat those foods again. This is repeated over and over unless this person can experience an entire psychic change. There's very little hope of her recovery. I don't know why this works. I really don't. I don't know how it works, but I tried everything except for surgery. I tried and drinking my own pee. I tried everything, you know, and I couldn't get out of the food. I need to make it clear. The reason I read that paragraph, it says a sense of ease and comfort. It doesn't say you're going to get it. And apologies to AA because I changed the word and actually I probably shouldn't have, but you only get a sense. I never felt ease and comfort. I felt nervousness and anxiousness and a self-hatred that I could never get past ever. And I just ate and ate and ate and I ate like Bill drank and I ate from a very early age, a very early age. I can't remember anything but eating. So I had a very good friend who used to say to me, she's a doctor, and she used to say to me, how did you not know you were a compulsive overeater? She said, like, you were 350 pounds. And I was like, because it was all I knew. It's that part it says, I couldn't differentiate the truth from the false. My alcoholic life, my compulsive overeating life was all I knew. And I grew up in Northern Ireland and dinner time is very important for us. So we all came home for dinner and, you know, we all sat around the table and ate. And I had four older brothers, so they had big appetites, you know, teenage boys, you know, whereas I was a lot younger. I was 6 years behind the youngest boy. And it was like, I guess it was part of watching them as well. Not that it was their fault, but it was, you know, because you could write a million reasons why people eat. It doesn't really matter how I got here. I'm here and I'm a compulsive overeater and I will be to the day I die. I'm recovered 4 years. Yesterday was my anniversary, 4 year anniversary. So I'm delighted. Thank you. But you wouldn't have thought of last night with my emotional sobriety. I'm telling you now, I'm narked. I'm sat with a broken ankle, shattered to pieces ankle, with my legs up here on the sofa. And I'm just, you know, last night I was so frustrated. I've watched every blooming series that you could imagine on TV. I'm just so fed up. I've listened to so many podcasts, but I'm sober and I'm not eating because the food is not going to do for it, you know. What I always say to my sponsees, the steps will do for you what the food will do without all the horrific consequences. You know, I couldn't get out of the food. And I just want to share a wee diagram to explain it that I think shows it really, really well. Let me just see if I can find it. Might be able to find it. I'm hoping. Oh, here we go. This was my circle, my behavior. So a feeling, it talks in the big book of feeling irritable, restless and discontent. Guys, if you want any of the stuff I show you, it's not a problem. Just email me or text me. Then I start thinking about food and I think, oh, just one of these will solve it. And then I have the one small bite. And that's the danger. When I bite into an alcoholic food, something happens in my body and the craving begins. And then before I know it, I've eaten the whole packet or the whole sleeve or the whole blooming fridge. And then I start to feel shit about it again. And I have remorse, guilt and shame. Sorry for swearing. And then I swear I'll never do it again. And you know what? Every New Year's Day, I swore that this would be the year. It would be the year. Every Monday, it was going to be my week. And by Tuesday, I was in the food. And by Wednesday, I'd lost control. And by Thursday, I hated myself. And Friday, I wasn't tasting anything. Because the first bite demands the second screams for the third. And by the time I get the fourth, I can't taste a thing. And that's the way it always went for me, you know. And it talks in the big book, you know, it says alcohol was my master, food was my master, it was everything, it was my best friend, it was my go-to. And, you know, I had to work really hard. I have to work really hard at this. I really do now, because I've relapsed. I relapsed, well, four years ago was the end of it, but I relapsed. I'll just give you a quick history. I came to England. I'm not an alcoholic, but I started drinking at 18. Alcohol for me is just a gateway drug. It just makes me want to eat. For some reason, when I ingest alcohol, I want something salty, crunchy, carbate, whatever it is, I want it, you know? So it's not, I just don't drink, obviously, because it's loaded in sugar. And, you know, when I first came, my brother had tried to get me into a way, and I was like, he was like, I think you've got a problem with food. And I was like, what are you on about? And he was like, I think you're an addict. And I thought, no, I'm not. Because an addict to me was a gutter drunk. But I am a gutter drunk with food. That's the problem. You went out for dinner with me when I was in the food. I wouldn't hear you. You could be telling me you had 3 months to live. And I'd be like, that's an awful shame. But are you going to get 3 sides? Could I get away with 2 sides? Am I going to get a dessert? This has been going on in my head. I wish you'd shut up so we could order. You know, isn't that terrible? You know, looking back now, and I would have done anything for you. Honestly, I was the one friend you could have rung in the middle of the night and I'd have been there like a shot. But my God, did I keep the scorecard? But I didn't even realize that scorecard was real until I look at it now when we stepped hands. At the minute, I'm laid up and I'm thinking in my head, who's not come to see me yet? Who's not, you know, who's not offered to come and help clean the house? Who's not, you know, there goes the scorecard and the tick on my bad days, by the way. And then I have a step 10 that deals with that. So my brother suggested a way. I said, no way. You're full of rubbish, but it's planted a seed. And then 2002, got diagnosed with a very rare autoimmune disease, very similar to lupus, got put on a very high dose of steroids and couldn't stop eating. And it was like, honestly, it was like lighting petrol or gasoline. My disease just went vroom. And I was just feeding it. It's like feeding, you know, the gremlins, like don't feed them. It's just like, it was just going crazy. And then I thought, oh, there's something not right here. My sister-in-law said something to me. She said, are you okay? You haven't stopped eating all Christmas. And I thought, my God, she noticed. How could she not have noticed? I was 350 pounds. I could barely get up the stairs. I was sweating. You know, nobody would want to sit beside me on a bus, you know, because I took up half, you know, 3/4 of the seat. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't walk anywhere. I was so incapacitated. Well, I could, but only a bit. And then eventually, thank God, I rang my brother after that Christmas because it was awful. And I said, what about this away rubbish you're on about? Tell me about it. And would you believe, search and rescue came straight to my door. It was literally 1 kilometer from my house. It was walking distance from my house. And I thought, and I'll go. And I was really excited because I thought everybody would be really big. And then I would finally not be the biggest in the room. And they were off them. I was like, what is going on here? I was raging. And then I realized, I started hearing my story. But they talked about eating about out of bins. And I thought that was insane. I thought, what are they on about eating out of bins? That's disgusting. And then I realized it never got to the bin with me, the trash can, because I was the bin. I was the person that ate everything. I never let anything go to waste. So I heard the message and I worked the steps. I got abstinent and I had 5, 6, 7 years. I can't even remember. 5 years of brilliant sobriety. And then I got a lurking notion on a flight to Vegas on my honeymoon. We went around the world. And we were flying from Vegas to LA, and I'll never forget it. 55,000 feet up in the air, and I thought, geographical cure, this isn't going to hurt me. Got delivered a box on the plane. I was hungry, and I thought, this is fine. I'll be grand. And the thing is, I was grand, and I ate this thing that's up my trigger food, and I was grand, you know. But guess what?
10 minutes.
You know, thanks a million, Em. Do you know that noise? You know that white noise we all get? Do you remember the old transistor radios? You'd be trying to tune in the story or the song, and you were like, you know, say there was a really song, like a prayer. I remember always trying to find that by Madonna, and I'd be like, well, I can hear it. I can almost hear it. And it was like, that started again. That white noise started again. And I thought, what's this? I haven't had this in years. And I want to say that moment that I picked up, that was it. That was my thing, but it was miles before that. The thing is with emotional sobriety, with this program, it's not when you put the food in the mouth. It's when you stop doing your step 10s. It's when you stop going to as many meetings. It's when you stop thinking about your behavior and your motives behind things. That's really, for me, when the program goes. So I went around the world and I started picking up in various places. By the time I got to Hong Kong, I was on my knees. And then I went in and out of the program for a couple of years. A load of life things happened. But because I wasn't on fit spiritual ground that it talks about in the big book, I hadn't strong enough faith that God could do this for me again. I'd taken back control. My dad dropped dead in the street at home. My mum dropped dead 1 year later. And then I got stage 4 cancer and I just couldn't stay sober. I couldn't stay stopped. I couldn't stop from starting and I couldn't stay stopped. And I was eating alcoholic foods flat out. And then I had a massive spiritual awakening. This does not happen for everybody, but I had got up to 400 pounds. I'd lost 140 and put on a whopping amount. And then basically I was sat in a bath. I had really bad blood cancer. And the only thing that took away the bone marrow pain was a hot bath. And I was sat in the bath. And as a big woman letting out the water first was a rookie mistake. And then I just all of a sudden, I was sat in the bath and I thought, I can't get out of the bath. And they've got one of those cords that you pull to call one of the nurses. My nurse looked like Britney Spears. I was 400 pounds. There was no way this little girl was going to be able to lift me, trust me. And I thought, I can't pull this. And I said to God, you need to get, you know, I just started to cry. And God said, you need to go back to OA. I heard it as clear as day. And then I was like, yeah, but I need to get out of this bath first. I got out of the bath. I was still in the wheelchair that week. I wheeled myself back into OA, literally. And I haven't looked back since. That was 4 years ago, and I've been blessed ever since. And you know, I was lucky enough. Now, you know, I work really hard at this because the first abstinence you get is a gift. But see, once you pick up, see the relapse, you've got to really work at it. This is my life's work now. So what did I do when I came back? I surrendered. Step one, I didn't eat because you know my life was. I didn't eat because my life was unmanageable. My life was unmanageable. Therefore, I ate because that was all I knew. Came to believe in a power greater than myself. Yeah, I did. I always believe in God. I was brought up a strict Catholic. I knew all about God. And then I found my faith again when I came back to OA. But humbly asked him, you know, that part three, that hand it over to God, there's only two rooms in my house, recovery or disease. I can't live in both. I can only live in one or the other. And when I was in relapse, I locked God into the room. I locked the recovery room. I literally locked it shut. And they do say about addiction, they say addiction is the only disease with a key on the inside. You know, and I left God there, and I thought, I'll come back to you in a minute. And it was a Santa Claus God I wanted when I was in the food. Please let me keep eating and stay thin. Please let me be successful without having to do the work. Please let me, you know, not have cancer without having to take chemotherapy. Whatever that please was, actually, that wasn't an issue. But you know, and I nearly died a few times when I had the cancer, and I felt like I knew that moment in the bath that the cancer wasn't going to kill me. Thank God I'm cancer free now. That wasn't going to kill me, but it was eating that was going to kill me. I was eating against my will and I couldn't stop. And that's why I had such a big awakening. I really believe that. But anyway, and then four, search of fearless moral inventory. Four, the one we all get stuck on. I gave myself a weekend and I wrote like Angela Lansbury in Murder, She Wrote. I was there deep, 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 deep all day long. And then I thought, right, hand it over. Here you go. Take all that rubbish. I thought I was done. Character defects. Now I think I've changed how I look at this now, six, seven, eight. What would I look like without them? So I'll give you an example. You know, I've put a few things in the chat as well about impediments to recovery. And you think vicarious thrill, like gossip. What does that look like when I don't do it? So I'm in a room with people and they're all gossiping. And I desperately want to say what a dickhead I think somebody is, because that's what I'm thinking in my head, if I'm being honest, sometimes. I don't say it. Because what does it look like when I don't say it? It looks like something that God would do. Would God want me doing this? I don't think so. Would my sponsor want me doing this? I don't think so. Would somebody I love want me to say something nasty? I don't think so. So I just have to look at that and have a checklist in my head. By the way, I don't always get it right. Sometimes, you know, especially with TV stuff, I'm like, idiot. You know, political stuff. I can't help myself. But I try my best not to now. I really do. Because it's, you know, the more you feed something that grows, the more you starve it, it dies. It's just a practice, and you have to practice that muscle memory with God as well. Step nine, I make amends for whatever I do now on the spot, because I get this icky feeling, you know, that icky feeling when you know you've done something wrong. I get that icky feeling now and I recognize it because the food isn't covering it. Step 10, I do every day. I'm on the step 10 train. I love it. I get to speak to somebody every day on a fortnightly cycle. It tests my patience. It tests loads of stuff, pushes my buttons, but I love it because it pushes me out of my comfort zone. Step 11. So step 10, I'm clearing the channel for myself. It's getting rid of all the rubbish. Step 11, start talking to God. I'm asking him to fill up my channel again. And step 12, I pass it back out again and empty the channel. Nothing will ensure immunity against alcohol as working with another alcoholic. Nothing ensures my immunity without working with others. I have a sponsor. I give service when I can, as much as I can. And sponsoring for me, it's very interesting. Somebody rang me recently and said, you know, I'm really scared to sponsor. And I have a very good friend in the program who says, you should be scared not to sponsor. And she said, I just haven't gotten a buddy yet. And I said, yeah, but this isn't an 11-step program and we're not thieves. You know, we've got to give back what we've given. So, you know, and the more we stay in the disease, the less chance we have of helping others. That's what I always think. Because I know, I don't know if I've got another recovery left in me. Only God knows that. It scares me now, the food, in the sense that, not, it doesn't scare me. I'm neutral around food. But what I mean is, it scared me how strong the disease got when I took my eye off my recovery. And now I know what my alcoholic foods are. And that's changed as well. I love that you read that, that changes. Because the first time in a way, sugar, sugar, sugar. But it's so much more than that. There's volume. Thanks a million, Em. There's volume. There's, you know, salt and crunch. There's eating too fast. You know, when I was in the food, I'd eat over the sink because that didn't count. I'd eat standing on one leg. That didn't count. I'd eat with the fridge door open. That didn't count. You know, all the rubbish stuff you tell yourself in your head. But now my meals, you know, I mightn't have, I always say I don't have a needle in my arm, but I've got a fork in my hand. And for that reason, I have to be so careful. If I find myself eating fast, I put my fork down now, I say the Serenity Prayer. If I find myself getting too excited about a certain food, I forget about the food. You know, the step 10 promises are clear. We cease fighting everything and everyone, including alcohol. And I am really grateful today to be able to say that that's all come true to me. Don't get me wrong. It doesn't always, I'm not always coming to it with, you know, there's not always unicorns. I woke up as grumpy as hell this morning. And, you know, I'm sick of having a broken leg. I'm sick of having to put on a boot that makes me look like a Mandalorian and having to shimmy down 3 flights of stairs and making coffee. Everything is just difficult. But I can do it and it'll pass. This too shall pass. The next person who says that to me, I'll probably nut them, but actually it's true. This too shall pass and it will pass because I know it will pass. And I know whatever food I ingest to try and make it pass quicker is going to keep me in a living hell. And I just want to share one more thing. Yeah, we talk a lot about the bedevilments. If you know the big book well, you know, there's a whole page on the bedevilments and what my life was like before away. Here it is on page 52. I was having trouble with personal relationships. I couldn't control my natures, my emotional nature. You know, I'd go from naught to insane in seconds. I'd be screaming at you before I knew it. My poor husband, if he didn't clean the counter properly or load the dishwasher properly, you know, it was like ethnic cleansing. It was that bad in my mind. You know, it was just awful. Couldn't make a living. That wasn't true. I could. I had a really good job. I had a feeling of uselessness totally. Every day I felt useless, full of fear. If I wasn't crippled by fear, I was crippled by resentment. But one thing about fear, fear will say, what if, what if, what if? But faith will tell me, even if. I was unhappy and I couldn't seem to be real help. And most of all, and here we go, the promises. After working the steps and now living in the solution, I want to help other fellows. My self-seeking slips away. It comes back. Sometimes it's an Achilles heel. I hate letting people down, blah, blah, blah. I'll comprehend the words around me and no peace. Yes, that white noise is gone. Our whole attitude upon life will change. Absolutely. Fear of people, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity, they'll all disappear. I do know a new freedom and happiness. I feel happy, joyous and free today. I really do. I know how to handle situations which used to baffle me. And if I don't, I sit with God. And no matter how far down the scale, God, or how far up the scale in my case, my experience can benefit. I don't regret the past and don't wish to shut the door on it. And I suddenly realised what God is doing for me that I couldn't do for myself. And I want to just share, I just shared before we, I'll just finish off by saying, I smashed my ankle in Los Angeles. And when it happened, the first thing I thought of was, I need an ambulance. I'm going to pass out. I was in Skid Row. I need an ambulance. I didn't think I need a burger because that wasn't going to get me sorted, you know. And that's a miracle. I didn't think of food all that day. I just thought about the pain. So I just want to re-clarify. My name is Rita Q. I am a recovered compulsive overeater, not cured, and I'm so happy to be here. And thanks for having me, guys. I'll leave it there.